In our staff, we use a tool called Slack that probably many of you are familiar with. But it's sort of, if you're not familiar, so it's kind of in between texting and emailing. And so everyone on staff, you know, can send a message out. You can send it out to everyone, or you can send it to specific people. And so last week, there was a Slack message to all our staff, and here's what Vivian wrote. I want you to listen to this and imagine you don't know Vivian, you don't know me, you don't know anything else except this message, but you're trying to figure out what is going on in this message, okay? So here's what Vivian writes. Hey all, to all the staff, not y'all, but hey all, do we have a more recent headshot of Curtis that better reflects his more mature and dignified stature? Okay, so that's the message. So first, I'm just going to ask you to give feedback. So you don't know Vivian, so what might your perception be? What could be going on with Vivian, only knowing this message, not knowing her? What might be going on? Just call that out. What might her attitude be? What might be the tone of her message? Okay, could be related to a picture. That's possible, and others don't look like that. Good call. Okay, she could be. Vivian could be being very respectful by that message. Or alternatively. Okay, she wants to update it. What were you going to say?
She needs your day off.
That's true, right? Yeah, this is a subtle way of saying, I mean, can we trade him in for a newer model? He's getting really old. So that could be. Now, again, you don't know me, this Curtis mentioned here. So what might this be saying about me, this guy Curtis? If all you had was this message, what might it be saying? Okay, I'm tall. Yeah, that would be great if it were true. That's not true. What? That I'm not mature. Yeah, it's like, how immature was he? You know, maybe he's going by faith. He's going to become more mature, hopefully. That could be it as well. So how could we know more about this? What would we need to actually get to the bottom of what this message was? Context, yeah, you need a little bit more. What's the context of this message? Are there any messages before this, any messages after this? And what in particular is she writing about? Now, you may have guessed, if you looked at your notebook, it's from this notebook that this message arose. So turn to like the second page of the notebook. There are some leaders' photos that for some reason Simeon Trust puts in there. And so this photo that we did, I did not give this to Simeon this last week. I sent it to Simeon probably 6 years ago. And it was probably 3 years old at that time. And so Simeon sent this to Vivian. Vivian's putting this notebook together last week. And she's like, whoa, this looks like Curtis's younger brother. It doesn't look much like Curtis. And she was, you know, saying, trying to be gracious, like, he has become more mature, more dignified. He's become older. Clearly, he's lost all his hair. And so just to be clear, I'm not in denial of that. We just only take a photo about once every 10 years here at Hope Fellowship. But maybe, Paige, I can get a new headshot while you're here today with the photo. So that may be a good byproduct of this. So in order to understand this message, you need to know the context. Who's Vivian? Who's Curtis? How do they know each other? What are they talking about? Is he really more dignified or not? And what do we mean by these pictures? So context means a great deal in so much of life. We understand one another. We understand conversations because of context. And so it is when we study the Bible. In order to study the Bible well, to do it faithfully, we have to read the scriptures in light of their context. And when I study the Bible, or teach the Bible in particular, without being mindful of the context, I can unintentionally make great errors in my teaching if I disregard the context. So here's our drawing for context. So we have the text. We have a variety of layers of context that we must consider. And the principle is this. I apologize for my handwriting. We must understand the context in order to see how the original audience understood the text. We must understand the context in order to see how the original audience understood the text. So if we miss the context, we may horribly miss how to rightly understand, how to get the text right, and then therefore, whether I get it across or not doesn't matter because what I'm getting across is not actually correct and true. So you saw last night the rectangle we work around. So on the left-hand side, we have the text. And so we're going to work our way. We do structure and we do context, as you've seen on your worksheet, right? When you did the worksheet, it says email it to you. You may not have known what it was, but immediately here's the question, what do I do with context? So that's what we're looking at in this time together. Now, here at Hope, we're working through the Gospel of Matthew. And so a couple of weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, I was preaching in Matthew 18. So open up your Bible to Matthew 18. And the text for that Sunday was Matthew 18, 15 through 20. Now, I'm going to ask you in just a minute, I'm going to ask you to turn to your neighbor and read that, only those verses. Nothing surrounding, only those verses, and then answer these questions quickly. What is the text saying? What's the purpose? And what's the tone of this? Okay? 18, 15 to 20. What's it saying? What's the purpose of it here? And what's the tone? So turn to your neighbor, answer those questions. Matthew 18, 15 to 20. Okay, I know I'm pushing you quickly, but we want to cover some ground this morning. So who wants to call out and say, what is 18, 15 to 20? What's this text saying? What's it saying?
Sin is serious.
Okay, yeah, sin is serious. Great. And what's the purpose of this? Why is it here? How is it trying to help us? Okay, yeah, it's a model. A model for what? Yeah, yeah. Disagreement over sin. Often even church discipline might be the category we'd use for that. And what does it sound like? What's the tone of this passage? Okay, yeah, it's serious, isn't it? What were you going to say?
I was going to say
serious. Yeah. It feels serious. It feels weighty. Almost feels kind of formulaic, you know, kind of a heartless description. Do this, then this, then this. Okay. Now I want you to turn to your partner and read the verses just before, 18, 12 through 14, and then think about what we just said, and then we'll think about, are there any revisions we'd make on what it's saying, what its purpose is, or what the tone is based on adding verses 12 through 14. Turn and talk about those briefly. All right, so what do you think? We read the verses just before. Now, previously we'd said it's addressing sin. It's guiding us in how to interact over conflict, even address church discipline, and it's serious. Any edit you would make, anything that we would update that at all based upon these verses just before? Anybody? What do you think? Does it change? Go ahead. Yeah, it really shifts things. You're like, okay, here's this call of God's people to pursue a wandering sheep. And here we're not talking about pursuing for the sake of salvation. In this context, it's pursuing a wandering sheep. And then this comes right after that. So here is a means of doing that. So now it becomes a very different feel than just that. Anybody else a thought based upon just including this context? What's the tone become, Julie? Yeah. At first reading, it sounds like a hammer, but now it has a different feel to it, doesn't it? Yep. Yeah, so we see after just reading three verses on the front end, it changes how we understand it. Now I want you to read the verses after, 18. It's a larger section, so you have to read briskly, 21 to 35. So these immediately follow that. Read that aloud, and then same questions. Do we make any alterations based upon that? So turn to your neighbor and do that. All right, what do you think? Does this last portion, does it impact at all our understanding of what it means, what its purpose is, or its tone? What do you think? That's right. Yeah. So then if we hold the context together, then we see, wow, the danger of wandering, but the call of God's people to pursue the wandering. And if they're wandering in unrepentant sin, here's a tool, here's a means of doing that, of going and pursuing that. We see the danger in that tool of unrepentance, friends, right? That's when the steps go forward, when someone is unrepentant. And we see the danger, that last portion, the danger of unforgiveness, right? So there's a danger to the one sinning of unrepentant sin. And there's a just as grave danger for us of lacking in forgiveness for them. So then what's the tone of the whole? It's very different than just this formulaic step-by-step process, which it does help us in that. But if we miss that, it becomes this hammer we use. But instead, it's this community of forgiveness pursuing wandering sheep, and here's the means to do that. Does that make sense? But if we just, you know, let's say someone just assigned to you, hey, teach 18, 15 to 20 this Saturday. One, you might say, no thanks. But if they did, if they did assign that to you, you may only be able to teach that, but you must study the context so that you can get it right when you get it across. Does that make sense? Now, that doesn't mean in order to teach this faithfully, you'd have to teach the entire section. But you, as the one handling it, would want to do that additional reading, and that should be in the background as you study so that you handle it appropriately. So, on your worksheet, there are four types of context. What were the four types that it said, gave you these four options? Tell us about the context. What were the four that we listed there? Literary, historical, cultural. Excellent. Well done. Front row and has the answers. Man, that's incredible. Yeah. So what do we mean? What does Simeon mean, I guess more specifically, by literary context? What does that mean? Yeah. It is actually the verses just before and just after, which is the tool that we just used there. What does it say before? What does it say after? And so the goal is then to see the flow of ideas and answering the question, you know, why is it here? What comes before it that might be shaping this? What comes after this that might reflect upon it? So literary context is very often helpful. Not always, but it's certainly one of the ones you'd want to check first. Now, what are some strategies, if we're going to use literary context, what are some strategies or some tools that we might use to try to explore literary context? Just call those out if you think of something. Yeah, read. That's always a great tool. And it sounds so basic, but it's a really helpful tool. Read and read it again. And in fact, read as much as you can. So if you're teaching and you can read the whole book, that's all the more helpful. At the very least, surrounding chapters as a part of that. So read it. And connected to that, I also commend reading it aloud as well. What's the difference between reading something in your own head silently and reading it aloud? How are those sometimes different? Yeah. You hear the emphasis slightly differently. Yeah. What else? That's true. Yeah. It slows us down. Yeah. I think we also can hear kind of repetition more. You might notice, I didn't notice that it said this word multiple times. But when I read it out loud, it kind of stuck out more as a part of that. So to find literary context, read and reread it, read widely, and read it aloud is a very helpful piece of that. And so I'm sure that as you were doing, Mark, you were finding help with literary context. The second tool is historical context. What do we mean by historical context, do you think? And this one can be a little bit easy for us to misunderstand. And what we're getting at in Simeon terms for historical context is the historical situation or the circumstances experienced by those to whom the text was written. So we need to know who was it written to, what are their historical circumstances. So we're not talking specifically about the circumstances in the text necessarily, but the one who are receiving it. What's going on in their lives at the time? So we're in the Gospel of Mark. Who were the recipients of the Gospel of Mark? And kind of when was it, do we think? Okay, Gentile believers, yeah. Okay, yeah. So early, you know, 50 AD, not long after Jesus' life, death, and resurrection. Are they in one particular city? No, so they're kind of spread out more in that way. So in some ways, in the Gospels, historical context, it can be helpful, but it's not as helpful as it might be, for instance, what would be an example of a book in the Bible that historical context could be really insightful, potentially? Say it again? Daniel. Okay, how so?
Because it's
Good. Somebody else?
Epistles,
yeah. That's a kind of most obvious one, right? Would be like, so Ephesians, we'd need to know, what's the context of Ephesus at the time they're receiving this? Does that make sense? And so often there's a lot of richness to allusions, images that might be there. Clarify for us, like, oh, this is what life was like in Ephesus at the time. So historical context is often helpful. Now, what would be some tools or some strategies, do you think, to discern the historical context of, let's say, Ephesians or another book? Say it again.
Cross-references,
yeah. So those can also often be a helpful tool to us. What else?
Commentary.
A commentary can also be very helpful, right? It can often give you some of that background in a concise way, hopefully. But here's what's going on in that place at that time. What else? Yeah, a good study Bible. I think those are just a great tool to have in general. We're blessed so many levels to live where we are right now, to have the number of translations and Bibles that we have. And I would just commend a good study Bible that, you know, they're not cheap, but it can do the work of a variety of things. I mean, they're almost like a commentary, and I would really commend a good study Bible. And if you carry it around, you look really spiritual, right? You carry around this great big study Bible. Oh, this old thing? You know, and you just like bring it in there. And like, wow, she really knows the Bible. Oh, wow. So, yeah. Bible handbooks, another tool similar to those that can be helpful also. Now, what about cultural context? In cultural context, we're studying, exploring terms, concepts, realities going on in the passage that need to be understood in order to understand the passage. So turn back to Matthew. So we saw this just a couple of weeks here at Hope. So Matthew 17, 24 to 27. We'll just do this together. Would somebody read that for us out loud? Great, so you're thinking about your group you're going to teach, you're thinking about just for yourself. What if some areas here that you'd say cultural context matters? Like, here's something I need to try to understand in order to teach this clearly. What do you see in the text?
What is a drachma?
Yeah, first off, what's a drachma? Is that a big number? Is that a small number? Okay, what else? Yeah, who are the tax collectors? At first guess, just hearing this, who do we think these tax collectors probably are? Who are they working for? The Romans, right? We'd immediately think that. Tax collectors are bad guys, and they're for the Romans, except that's not the truth here. This is actually a temple tax. So these are different folks coming, and they're actually coming door to door. It's like coming to your house to collect your tithe, like, hey, we're here to get your tax for the church. Maybe you should input that in your church plan if you're a part of that. Might not go real well. But so this is a different sort of tax. So if you just, you know, quickly read it, didn't do context, you might preach it, teach it, without mentioning, oh, this is temple tax, not Roman tax. Maybe also how to catch a fish and find a coin in its mouth. That might be another cultural context piece as well. But that's where these are pieces that they're not essential in it, but like if I miss that, I could mislead or misunderstand myself. So cultural context. So what do you think might be some tools to help us in cultural context?
Study Bible.
Yeah, a study Bible is still really helpful, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, it's really valuable. You're just kind of jotting things down. What do I not know what it is? And then especially thinking about your audience that you're teaching, because if you've been reading the Bible a long time, you know the Bible well. Maybe if you grew up in church, you have more Bible knowledge than you likely realize. It's easy for us to assume, oh, yeah, we know what this is. Most people don't. So not just thinking through what do you not understand, but based on the audience you're teaching, what's it very possible that they don't understand as well? So just kind of tracking those things. And then you can go to a commentary, a study Bible. And then the last one is biblical context. Now, this is when the author of my text brings in other parts of scriptures through a quotation or an allusion. So we're in the Gospel of Mark. This would be when in Mark we have a quotation from the Old Testament in our text. Does that make sense? And what should we do if we have that? we should quickly say, that's maybe a big deal when we find that. And the same is, you know, true when we're reading the Old Testament and we find a verse that's cited in the New Testament. We likewise want to go, that's a big deal. This is probably a really valuable text. I should look at it. So we want to do it on both sides, wherever you are, as a part of that. But how do we know that? How do we read and discern if there's a quotation in our text? Okay, sometimes cross-references do it. Now, cross-references may not be a quotation, though, because those have been added by helpful, faithful scholars who often on a theme or an idea are helping to connect that, which are really valuable. They're worth chasing out, but it may not be a direct quotation. That's right. Yeah. So in our text this Sunday, it will be, Jesus will say, you've read, right? I mean, so he's pointing them to that in that way. Yeah. Right. That's right. Exactly. Yep. Anything in the typeface sometimes that helps us? That's right. Yeah, so sometimes a footnote that's, it looks like a cross-reference, but it's not. It might actually just say, here's where it is. This is from Isaiah 7. And then sometimes you'll find the quotation is indented. So it'll be different from what's around it. And again, that's just something that makes you think, huh, what's going on there? Look at the bottom of the page. So you'd want a Bible that has that shows those footnotes. That doesn't necessarily have to be the one you carry around, but you need one that would show those, because not every Bible, just for the sake of, like, you know, making a thinner Bible, they don't all include that. So, but you'd want one that you're doing your studying in that would show those footnotes as a part of that. Now, what's an allusion? How's an allusion different from a citation? That's right, yeah. So, like, you know, you're writing a paper for college, and you footnote it, you're saying, here's where it is, this is the specific spot, and you've tried to do it word for word, hopefully. But an allusion, the writer is in some ways sort of assuming his readers understand some of this writing, and he may give a theme or almost nearly a quotation, but it's not a quotation that he gives. And so it does take a little more work because that may not be obvious to us. And that's where just the more reading, as we grow as Christians, the longer we're doing this, the more quickly we can pick up those allusions as well. So then how do we detect, these? Same sort of thing, right? We want to faithfully read the scriptures, read them over and over, watch for these footnotes. Always chase out the footnotes as well. So we explore the context, but then what's the point of the context? There's another question that comes with question two that has all the context questions. What do we do at the end of that? What do we ask you on the worksheet? How does this inform the text? So context work is valuable, but don't stop there, because the question isn't do you know it all, but how does this inform your text? And in some passages, you may get all four. Some you might find one. But the question is, do any of these really help inform your text? And you may have a passage where, honestly, you look at all four, and there's nothing in particular that particularly informs it. There are other times, as we just already saw in that example, like, if it doesn't inform it, then I'm really going to miss that. Does that make sense? So the goal is gathering this information, and then how does it inform my understanding of this? And please hear this. Also, the goal is to inform my teaching of this text, but I may not necessarily teach much of this context in my talk. In fact, it may not come in at all. So I need to know it. It should color my teaching. And at some points, you might bring it in. But sometimes, especially if we're new to these sort of tools, we can be like the seminary student who's in his first semester or her first semester. And when they do a teaching, they read all the commentaries, and they bring all of it to bear in their teaching. And honestly, it's horrible to listen to, isn't it? I mean, I've done it. You've heard it. Let's just admit that happens. Because we don't know how do we distill what actually needs to get into the talk. I need to do all this prep. Do the context. But you can faithfully teach it, maybe not even bringing in the context, because you've distilled it down. And part of it depends on how much time do you have. If you have 10 minutes, you have 20 minutes, you have 40 minutes. Is this a systematic, in-depth Bible study? Is it actually more an exhortation? The tone of the talk, what is it? So do the context work, but please don't bring it all into the teaching. You'll wear everyone out. And the tough part is you're excited about it, right? It's fun to do this. You're like, isn't this so cool? And you start telling people, and their eyes are just glazing over like, I'm glad you like it, but I don't know. Yeah, that's cool that you have this new Bible handbook and you looked up drachmas. But what's the point of that? So please don't bring it all in that way. All right, let's do an exercise, an example of this. I'm going to have you turn to your neighbor. I'm going to go to Luke 19, 28 to 40. I want you to read it aloud and then ask the question, is there an allusion here? Is there an allusion here that would help in our right handling, our understanding of this text? So Luke 19, 28 to 40, turn to your neighbor, explore that. All right, let's see what we have. So let's imagine you're teaching this in a week and a half. As you're just reading this text over and over, and you're just jotting down things. Anything that might stick out here, anything that I don't understand. And as you read, is there anything that kind of brings an echo from the Old Testament? That maybe this allusion, maybe it's not. I don't know. So anything you saw that could be an allusion to the Old Testament? Okay. Okay. Excellent. So you'd say, okay, here's an echo. Might chase that out. Say, does that help my understanding? Okay. Yeah. So that's another one. Might tease that out as well. What else? Whitney? Okay, yeah. So you might think, what's this, right? And this one we often think, okay, why is he riding a donkey? What's the point of the donkey? I think we're going to say the same thing as well. Yeah. So let's zero in on that one. So you read it, you think, is there something to that? Now, but there's no, if you look, there's no quotation likely. Now, maybe you have one that would show an allusion. Did anyone have a footnote that points you to the Old Testament on the donkey piece? Okay. So then it takes, okay, where might that be? Anybody? I mean, you get extra points. Vivian will give you extra bacon if you know this one. So do anybody know, like, is there an allusion in the Old Testament that he might be drawing from here? Okay, we do. Yes, we see that donkey. We chase out. Could it be Balaam? Okay, great. Let's turn there. So it's not a quotation, but it's a helpful study Bible that says, hey, here's an allusion to that. Zechariah 9:9. If you don't know where Zechariah is, that's okay. It's almost at the very end. Zechariah 9:9. Somebody read that for us. Okay. So that's context. Here's an allusion. But then the question is, how does this inform? It's an interesting fact. Again, we're excited by that. Cool. A study Bible worked. But how does that inform our teaching, do you think? So how would that affect my teaching of Luke 19 to know that? Just call it out. Just say it out loud. What? Yeah. So this is a specific prophecy of the promised one, of the king coming in this way. So this is a big deal, right? I mean, and Jesus knows this. He knows Zechariah 9:9. And he's choosing this donkey, riding it on it intentionally. So he's flagging something here, and there are probably numerous levels of what he's flagging, but one he's saying is like, that, remember that? I'm that. To those who will see, to those who will hear, it's like waving a flag to say, I am that back there. So that would inform your study. Let's do another one. Turn to Mark 14. And let's say that you're supposed to teach in 2 weeks, and someone assigned you it's a strange portion of text you would never be assigned, hopefully. But they broke it up this way. I want you to teach Mark 14, verses 3 through 7. Nothing more than that, 3 through 7. So read that briskly. What are some, obviously, I'm hinting we're going to inaccurately teach it because of how it's been cut up. But what would you teach just from this, and how might you inaccurately teach using this text? So 14, 3 to 7, ignore all context, only read the text. All right, we're reading this without context. We're inaccurately teaching this? So what are some ways we could inaccurately teach 3 through 7? Yeah, that's right. Don't give to the poor. Jesus says, we'll always have the poor. Don't give to the poor. End all your ministries to those who are struggling. Good. I mean, not good, but that's what, yeah. Other things, what else might you say? Yeah. If you really want to be a devoted follower of Jesus, give all that you have, everything that you have, every cent that you have, give it always, give it freely. Anything else that would come to mind? Any other inaccurate teachings? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, let's think about context. So let's back up just before 14:1 and 2. It was now 2 days before the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and the chief priests and the scribes were seeking how to arrest him by stealth and kill him. For they said, not during the feast, lest there be an uproar from the people. And we come to our verse, we come along, but then I cut us off at 7. Let's keep reading at 8. Jesus says, she has done what she could. She has anointed my body beforehand for burial. And truly I say to you, wherever the gospel is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will be told in memory of her. So how do those verses inform the context, help us to think about this text clearly? What's a right reading of this text? What's the point of it? Yeah, Jesus knew where he's headed. The cross is coming soon. She too has heard him predicting this. She is in an act of worship and love of her Savior, does this. Jesus does care about the poor. That's not the point here, but there's something else going on because this greater one is in her midst. So obviously no one would ever divide it in that way, or I would hope that they wouldn't. But that's just, we want to be mindful, even as you divide up something, what's a good unit of that as well? So context on the whole is just, it's not a flashy or glamorous tool. And as I mentioned, the actual content of it may not make it into your talk very often. You have to do that selectively. But when used rightly, it can be a great help to us. And it's a very important safeguard to protect us from teaching them something that, one, it might be true and even biblical, but it's not actually in our passage. Or, worst case, it could actually be untrue. We could miss the entire point if we don't understand the context. So just let me commend this to you. And this is one of the, where like the press of time impacts our teaching. Because when the clock is ticking, you have to teach Friday, you have to teach Saturday, you have to teach Sunday afternoon, whenever it is. The more lead time you have, the more you can spend on these tools. But if I don't have time, it's easy to just rush past that. And I'm just trying to get to Jesus. And as we mentioned last night, we can make some significant errors in the midst of that. So let me restate our principle. Then I'll take a couple of questions if you have any. We must understand the context in order to see how the original audience understood the text. Any questions on context, the use of it, challenges you faced in the worksheets? Great, let me pray for us. I think we have a break, and I'm going to go take a headshot. So let me pray. Father, thank you for today. Lord, I'm grateful for these ladies and for their desire to grow and learn and the various ministries and churches that are represented and will be impacted as they go home. So I pray you give them energy today, joy. I pray they could let down their defenses in small groups. They wouldn't be insecure about that, but they would just see it together as a means of making progress. We're thankful for the grace that you have made available because Christ came on a donkey, because he went to the cross, how that changes everything for us and for the world. In Jesus' name, amen.